sports leader.
Flashlight?
Ladies and gentlemen, from the fighting city of Mankato, Minnesota, Nordo here to scratch. It's George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, a song called Flashlight.
It is. They are saying flashlight.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Flashlight, neon light, red light. Here we are. And there he is.
It sounded like it. I just don't know.
Well, see, we've never played the song past the scratch. So now I want to hear how many lights they identify.
How many they come up with, yeah.
Let's go. I mean, even Edina, Minnesota can recognize the funk appeal in this song. That's Bootsy Collins talking in the background.
Yo.
Does Mount Vernon, Minnesota think, Mount Vernon, South Dakota think this song is funky?
Funky. All sorts of funk. Yeah, we live in the 70s in South Dakota. What are you talking about?
What if you came in with a boombox and busted Flashlight in the locker room?
People would go nuts.
Would they love it?
Oh, they get that little going, this little rocking going.
But it's not hot in here.
Okay.
It's not like new school-ish enough, you know what I mean? Back when you played.
Yeah, I think it's more about just the beat, rhythm, the feel. A lot of funk.
I can't stop listening to this. Please, 15 more seconds.
I don't think of Central South Dakota as bringing the funk. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's disrespectful.
No, that's...
Yeah, what do you mean?
That's just my...
We can't get funky in South Dakota?
No, I don't think you can, honestly.
Come on now.
I question your funk.
Yeah, go ahead and no pie.
Openly.
Go ahead and no pie come in the age of rage.
Come see me. Come see me at a wedding, son.
Really?
Yeah, I think I can't get funky.
Oh, your chicken dance is legendary.
I'm doing whatever.
He's a Cupid Shuffle guy.
Of course I am.
Listen to that. Under the sun. Where the hell did that come from?
The sun is the ultimate light.
You'll have ample time here for Grey Duck. Grey Duck.
So they threw the sun in there.
It's the ultimate light.
Yeah.
The sun.
Oh yeah.
Without which there is no other light.
Hey, that was beautiful. Want to be a faith and gold guest? Most of all. Da da da. Look at Chad smile. Battle of wow. Enough of that chicanery.
Love it.
Chad Greenway.
That was fun.
Courtesy of Grey Duck Vodka and Grey Duck Spirits. Was there at any time during your long and storied and successful career, Mr. 5-2, at the end of a season, was there any form of peace, end of a season, like a certain degree of peace when you didn't make the playoffs, or as a week like this, were you generally all negative? Because you're about ready to watch your cohorts and people you know around the league chase that big prize, and you're sitting here holding something in your hand.
Yeah, wild card weekend is it can be real negative. I mean, you're home, you're watching, you want to be there, especially when you've had that playoff taste and get a playoff win, and you've been there. It's like, man, I want to be a part of that.
Right.
And obviously didn't get enough playoff opportunities in my career, and I was probably the reason for that. But I think there is a time though when you're 3-13, you're 5-11, and you're 5-10-1. You have these rough seasons where you're like, just thank God that's over.
Yeah.
And it's a grind. I think in seasons like this though, wildly negative and frustrating because you have so many opportunities to be a good football team. You have the personnel. You are in position to win so many of these games. And now you're going into an offseason with so much uncertainty. And, players under contract, players with a year or two left, is this new GM going to want me? Is this new GM going to want me long-term? I'm a good young player. Is he going to want me for a five-year deal? There's so many new things coming now. And I never dealt with a new GM. That never happened.
Yeah, so your whole career.
Which is astounding.
Which is wild, right?
Yes.
It's usually never that way. Do you think any of the players feel like, I built a lot of equity with these, you know, with the old coaches and with the old front office, you know, I have personal relationships. They know how hard I work. They know I'm on time every day. And here come all these new people and they're not going to know any of that. I've lost all of this goodwill and equity that I had built over X years.
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the reasons I stayed here all every offseason and worked out at the facility every day was because I wanted
BC?
Rick to see me. I wanted Coach Childress, Coach Frazier, Coach Zim to see me working out, grinding, knowing that I'm there for the organization and wanting to be a part of it. Now, maybe that's just a wonk, right? Loyal, like trying to like, you know, but I felt like that was the best way to protect my future and relationship with those guys. And it's because they were here, it worked. I mean, you go from Childress to Frazier. Frazier saw me work, was my coach for a number of years. So like he moved right into that role. When I re-signed, Frazier was the coach and coming into that, and he wanted a leader, a captain to be a part of that thing that he could trust. So I was in a great position there.
Yeah.
You know, if that GM changes hands and coach changes hands, but right before a contract and they come in and watch tape and be like,
right.
You know, not my guy,
all
that equity that was built up that you mentioned from, you know, even on the field stuff, you go out and play. Yeah, but now we have a new system and God, his body type doesn't fit that system, you know, perfectly. You know, fans like him, you know, he's a good player, but he's going to fit in our system. We want to pay him and break him off all this money. You know, we don't trust that. You know, we're going to save ourselves $50 million or whatever, and we're going to go a different route and get our guy in here.
And you may have been a player who was playing hurt for, you know, a half the season.
That was the one.
And you're out there in games in which maybe you shouldn't even be on the field.
Yeah.
But you're on the field and you're playing at 80% because you're dragging a limb behind you. And they don't know that, you know, or don't appreciate
that. There's nothing that made me more upset than after that, the year when Frazier lost his job and Zim comes in. Right. And I had played with, I had a broken wrist in two spots, had played for like 8 to 10 weeks. It was misdiagnosed. So I'm
in
playing
2013.
It was that. Yeah, that'd be the year. Yeah.
Jordan.
So I play with that. Right. And they called it a sprained wrist for the first 3 weeks. And I go to Suge. I'm like, dude, this thing, we have to get this looked at again. This is not getting better. Like, I hate to complain. Sure enough, broke. Like the end of my radius was broke off.
Really?
I think the lunate in my wrist was broke.
Yeah, wow.
So we go in there, I'm like, okay, it's broke.
Sugarman saved your life. You're nothing without him.
Yeah, Sugar's the best. There's no doubt about that. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. But then you go on and I play through that thing. I go through practices. I don't miss practice. I play. And then they ask me for a pay cut. And I look back at that year. I actually was looking back at that like a couple of weeks ago. And I was.
The timing.
I was so mad because I look back at that.
I bet.
Statistically, I'm like, okay, team was eh. I performed, played my butt off. I know I played with injury, played through this thing that sucked every week. And then you take money from my pocket.
Yep.
And I was just like, and that was, you know, you remember, you guys were in here when I came in that, I think it was a Friday. Maybe it wasn't you. I can't remember, Charge, but I came in here with this, like, this different energy.
I remember.
Are you kidding me?
And I was like,
I was so
PO'd, but so motivated because I knew at 31-ish, whatever I was, that
you had years left.
Somewhere else wasn't going to value me either.
About that.
So I knew this was the best spot for me, and I had to bite that thing and be like, okay, let's go.
And then
reinvent, you know, comes in, now we have a new defense, and it's like, man. But personally, it's like, really?
Yeah, that's got to hurt.
That was like July of 2013, 2014. And little did you know, 2.5 months later, Brandon LaFell was going to break your ribs.
Yeah, that happened. That was great.
That was a really nice one-year run for you.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
On the field.
But the thing, the part about it was, so I can talk about this now, but what I signed my 11th, you had a 5-year deal. They took some money from me. I signed my 11th year, the exact dollar amount that they owed me.
Wow.
And I made it. So, like,
That was your last year, your one-year deal.
The money they took from me for my 4th and 5th year, they took money in both years, but they guaranteed both. So I thought that was a great deal because I love the guaranteed dollars late in your career. I'm on the team. You have to pay me.
You're going check to check, no doubt.
So now I'm saying, but now it's like, hey, four girls to raise, man.
I understand that.
But the point being is I'm saying, okay, you owe me, it was like 3-something. It's like, this is what I'll take. I'm coming back for 11. And we negotiated and it got real close to that number. And I felt I was just happy because I'm like,
what?
I'm going to walk off this thing after 11.
Come on, man.
But I'm petty like that.
No,
you know that.
11.
Come on.
Are you saying 11 million?
No.
No. 3 point whatever it was.
3 point whatever, but that's before taxes.
It was. Exactly. Exactly. Whatever the real number is. My point is I'm petty like that. And it's like, you know what? And I played the 11th. I had a great time.
You ain't petty.
And, I think I am.
No, you're not.
You know, but okay.
You were,
that last deal was not a sure thing.
And you were moving.
I remember.
No, I was a free agent.
You were a free agent.
Yeah, first time ever.
Yep.
You weren't sure they wanted you. You said you weren't sure you wanted to play, although I always thought you did if you could get the deal.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think, you know, this thing could have gone either way, but they knew that you were somebody who was coming in and working. Back to this.
Yeah.
You're coming in, you know, training every day, you know, the reputation,
I had to stop because
else.
I was no longer under contract.
Well,
I couldn't get hurt in there.
Yeah, that's
so
a great point.
It was real awkward, right? Yeah. You know, decade going in the same spot, right? Yeah. And I'm like, well, they know I wanted to play, and they know, I know they still wanted me, but I'm like,
now you're at Anytime Fitness.
Hey, yeah, so they're charging, I'm getting invoiced $200 a month just to go in and use the facilities, you know?
Yeah. Who are they, Comcast? But anyway, when we return with Chad Greenway, Grey Duck Vodka, Grey Duck Spirits, there's something in Church's Tolstoy-type prep that into which I would like to dive because I don't quite understand it. Mm. Like traits of the next coach.
This is very understandable.
Well, okay.
Not for all.
One thing he writes is, I don't want a guy who has a particular system. And Chad Greenway and yours truly would like that explained to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we will
do
that when we return to KFAN. But first, that cash thing.
Indeed, KFAN.com is the spot to go, and every hour, a new chance to put a grand in your hand. You might win $1,000. This hour's keyword is family. So go to KFAN.com, enter the keyword family, and you're in the mix to potentially win $1,000. KFAN.com, the keyword is family. Good luck. I hope you win.
For football.
Star. Paul Charchian, Paul Allen. Friday football feast, 10:20. Grey Duck Vodka and Spirits, and Chad Greenway, and Paul Charchian with some traits of the next coach. And, you know, when I read, I don't want a guy who has a particular system, though, first thing I thought of, you ain't talking about the offense, right? I mean, because they...
Either side of the ball.
Well, and riff pontificate... jump on the metaphorical soapbox long as you want, man. It's radio. But when I read that, I'm like, you can't do any more for a quarterback than this team did for Kirk Cousins over 4 years. With draft, free agency, he's comfortable. He's most comfortable with what he learned in Washington with LaFleur and O'Donnell and McVay and Shanahan. So they bring in Gary Kubiak, completely change the power run vertical pass offense to make it a zone bootleg game for him. I've never seen that in my 20 years calling Vikings football, from the draft through free agency. So if you're talking about the offense, man, I'd be really curious to hear what you have to say.
Chad.
Let's hear it.
Let's you and I talk about this. I don't want a coach that's got a system that requires specific traits to work. And if you don't have those traits and those guys, you don't have an offense or a defense.
I think what you're probably trying to say, and I think this comes across all sports, any facet, any level.
I'd like to hear that.
You have to me, a great coach coaches the personnel he has.
Absolutely.
To the best of their abilities. Mm-hmm. So we have guys under contract that, and it could be Kirk, it could be a number of guys, right? That they're here to stay regardless of who comes in for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, ongoing. You can't bring your system in and say, this is what I do and this is all I know.
Right.
Because if I don't have those types of players, I can't win. Well, to me, then you're not a good great coach.
Right.
We brought a quarterback in and changed the entire offense.
No.
Let me give one a good example. Mike Tomlin.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Tomlin gets hired in Pittsburgh. Defensive coordinator there is Dick LeBeau.
Yeah.
Tomlin doesn't come in and say, whoa. I'm a Tampa 2 guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Tampa 2 guy. Hold on now.
Yeah.
We can't win with these guys. Come on. No. Mike Tomlin said, you're elite. You're staying. We're winning. Let's go. And he's still there, still one of the top coaches in the world. And
his coordinators have had a lot of success, too.
Yeah, and I think the point you bring up is, hire a guy who's going to trust the people he hires. So if you're the head coach and I hire you and you're going to say, you're my OC, you're my DC, hire your staffs, go do your job.
I'll give you two other examples of guys I don't want. like Chip Kelly, right? It's an extreme example, right?
He had interest.
No, of course, we're not hiring him. I just mean...
You say Kirk Ferentz? Yeah, I'm interested.
I bet you are. Chip Kelly had a very specific offense that was the only thing he could run, and he had to have personnel that worked just for that.
Yep.
Brad Childress came here with his kick-ass offense, and then when it didn't work, he's like, well, I don't understand. This offense worked, you know, it worked in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, why isn't my kick-ass offense working here? It's, you should be able to coach to the strengths of the players you've got, and the coach should change, not trying to change 11 players on offense.
I think part of the issue in your argument, though, is think about the NFL, right? The nepotism in the NFL, for lack of a better word. You have systems that start West Coast offense. You have these systems that get passed down through the generations over years. And the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the problem with these guys, they come to the system and they learn a system and they're not willing to get out of their own way to be creative and come up with their own concept because my dad or my, you know, whoever, George Seifert, whoever it is, passed it down. Now it's mine. And I'm going to add a couple of wrinkles because I have I have Trey Lance or I have this, you know, I have Mariota, but I still, this is what I can do. Well, okay. Well, maybe Kirk can't do that. And now Kirk's your quarterback for 3-4 years. Now you need to adjust and bring in people that can help you adjust. And again, I think your point is accurate and I agree with you. The chance that happens here are pretty slim, in my opinion, based off just the nepotism and passed down ability of these coaches. And that's why I would love somebody new and fresh with a fresh set of eyes that doesn't have, you know, a 40-year, you know, experience with all these other guys. And we're going to get, you know, all these old systems and all these coaches that have been bouncing around the league for 30 teams. And, you know, if you're going to change course in complete fashion and bring somebody in new with an opportunity, I think would be the best refresh.
I believe we will have somebody young in place. Just one last thing on bringing in people there. You know, if you try to do personnel based on the system, what if we had done that with John DeFilippo?
Yeah.
Right? John DeFilippo needs us to overhaul our personnel to run the John DeFilippo offense, right? You know, and you don't know how bad it's going to be. And now you've thrown away good players to try to put in a bad system.
I'm still not understanding the offensive portion of the equation. Because in the last 4 years, which would be half of Mike Zimmer's regime, there is one coordinator after coordinator after coordinator after coordinator, which is not preferred. One of them went on to become the Associated Press Coach of the Year in Cleveland.
He doesn't count. That's not fair.
Okay. But but it's things changed when they went all in on Cousins. They changed the system for him. Okay, to become conducive to the most important player on the team. And then subsequently from Garrett Bradbury to Christian Darrisaw to Brian O'Neill to Irv Smith to Justin Jefferson, KJ Osborne, Dalvin Cook before that, Alexander Mattison, you can't do any more to have a system that is conducive to one player and then continue to fortify him. So I don't understand from an offensive standpoint, what you're talking about.
So I agree 1,000% with what you're saying, because they specifically did that and built it instead of around a coach's system, which it was his system, but that quarterback fit that system to a point. He was good at all the things that Kubiak wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they brought the people in to win with that system.
Right.
And with what Kirk did well. But what we
Which did, is the right way to play the game.
I agree. But what we didn't get is a staff that was willing to go push the buttons on game day to go win the game. How many times did we talk about it this year? Week after another loss, after another, you know, Detroit game, after another go to Green Bay at the end of the year, and you go in to not lose. Mm-hmm. Go in and let the players play. Yeah. To me, it's not bad that we brought those players in and built it around Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To me, it's bad that we have all those weapons and that talent and Kirk can make all these throws and we go to these games and we don't play to win, in my opinion.
Well, maybe the inherent underlying tone was the approach that was not spoken, but we could see it develop over the years.
Yeah,
we want to run, we want to chew the clock, we want to keep the defense fresh. So we are conceding, we are attempting to win lower scoring, close games.
Yep.
So maybe system is the wrong word, but the approach to the way the team is constructed to win, maybe that's the
I think that's why when you come to the conclusion that obviously Spielman and Zimmer get let go, again, it's a tough week, right? Zimmer, I mean, you move on already. The in the NFL world, in the fandom world, it's 5 days past and you move on, and And, you know, all those families that are affected and kids in schools that are now moving and dads lose jobs. And it's not easy. But I think the collective thought around it is, if that's the mentality with our team, is to try to go in with Sean Mannion and win 6-3 against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, right? We need a change of scenery and mentality when it comes to the football team. And I think that's probably when you look at, okay, why Zimmer after 8 years, you know, and I give a lot of, I love our ownership for that purpose, is we don't want to be the Dolphins after, we don't want to be the Texans. We don't want to be these teams that are a year or two into a wholesale change.
Yeah.
And now you're doing it again. And yeah, I mean, four new teams in the playoffs this year. You can flip and become a new playoff team the next year. No doubt about it. But how do you get the staying power? How do you get, can I make the playoffs year after year? And it's more of an anomaly to not make it than to make it. And that's obviously what the Wilson, every owner is trying to build. I think you build that on being stable. And they obviously gave Zim 8 years, loved Zim, didn't want to see him let go. But at the same time, 8 years, you have enough.
That's a long time run in this league.
It is. And yeah. And I think, and I give a lot of credit to the Wills for staying that long and saying, hey, we're going to give this a real go. And then now it's time to change. Mm-hmm. I would have been, I didn't want to see either guy lose their job. But I think it would have been a short sale to not wholesale change. Whether you keep Spielman and bring in a GM under him or you let Spielman go, I think they both had to probably go. Now my number one concern moving forward is, can we get the GM done in a expedited fashion to get the coach we want?
Yeah.
That's my number one concern.
Yeah. And they got, if you believe all the GM candidates that have been linked to this team, they got a lot of people to sort through right now.
That's not a fast process.
No, it's not a fast process. It will take time, and I think that part may end up frustrating some.
What do you think? I mean, from a time standpoint, I mean, is this GM going to be here in a week? You think it's a month?
10 days.
I'd like to see it quicker than that.
Yeah, I just think it's such an important hire. I think they're going to do tons of diligence, talk to a lot of people.
Like, don't you think Flores is gone by then?
Yeah, maybe. You might lose somebody. But the reason the Vikings have a chance to keep a guy like Flores on the hook or when he's got other opportunities is because of the stability you were just talking about.
Yeah.
The Wilfs have created
it's a
culture
job
that says,
we're
not going to do to you, Brian Flores, what the Dolphins just did to you.
Yeah.
We're going to give you all this run. And we're not just saying it. Right. Look at what we did.
Do you think that there's, you know, again, I don't know the underhanded dealings of this time of year in the coaching world, but do you think they're reaching out to, like, in their estimation, the top three candidates that they want to look at, right? Let's just say it's Bieniemy, it's Flores, it's Peterson, whoever it is, right?
Yep.
And you say, okay, you're in our top three, our top five. Do not take a hire until you give a chance to interview with us.
100%. And by the way.
And because of that stability and because of, obviously, mm-hmm. we're going to pay them a lot of money, they wait.
Not only has that happened, but with many teams, and I'm not saying the Vikings, with many teams, that happens November, December, when, you know, and I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying the Wilfs did this, but when you know on Thanksgiving that Mike Zimmer's going to go, you can't directly talk to, you know, the Doug Petersons of the world, but you have people who let him know.
You can't, but you
That's
can.
That's right, yeah. Yes. And especially
they DM
coaches,
him. They
especially
DM
coaches
him.
That are already hired, that are already on other teams,
100%.
Currently coaching, where you really can't talk to them. But your people can let people know who they know, then they know. So, yeah that stuff happens in the league.
Grey Duck Vodka, Grey Duck Spirits today over the weekend. What's going on?
Yeah, I think I'm looking at it here. I think this is Marnie's cheat sheet from the morning show.
The initials.
Probably. That's how she won.
She won the initials this morning, which is excellent.
Tweet you guys had with her dancing, like in the weight room or whatever. Awesome.
Yeah, she is a rock star, and she won this morning. So, with that, you can go to any Cub and Super One and go get a massive discount on some Grey Duck Vodka, Grey Duck Spirits. Mm. Just mentioned that Marnie won initials. And also, we are the official vodka of Hockey Day Minnesota in Mankato next Friday. I'll be down there. I know the Power Trip will be down there. Probably a call-in for me next week, guys.
Yeah, I'm not here next week.
Didn't know that. Okay.
Charles, are you live?
Apparently, yes.
I'm calling. Yeah, I'm calling next week from Mankato.
Okay.
So we're going to be down there hitting a couple MGMs and signing some bottles and kind of taking in Hockey Day Minnesota, which would be incredible. So thanks for having me. And I want to say thank you. It's been another feast ride,
great
guys.
Year.
I mean, I appreciate, I don't know how many years it's been. It's been pretty incredible.
You don't have to thank me, man.
And it is nice to be back in studio. I gotta say.
It is, but you don't have to thank me, man, because there were so many Fridays during the course of your career. I would approach you for an interview 9 to noon, and you were the grouchiest human being in the world. So then I would back off and say, hey, bad time to ask. And then you would feel guilty because you have a pure heart. You would text me later and say, yes, I'll do it that day.
Well, I mean, he's got a broken wrist in two spots. The GM just took his money out of
Brandon
his wallet.
Brandon LaFell just broke my ribs.
I got broken ribs. Pet's heads are falling off. I mean, right, come on.
Jack Greenwave, Grey Duck Vodka, Grey Duck Spirits. We have identified 3 NFL playoff games that are incredibly compelling to us. And also, we have a snippet from my podcast, Faith and Goal, the Faith and Goal podcast, episode 13, where this week we focus on the anniversary of the Minneapolis Miracle. We're going to play some of that back for you. Then welcome Greg Coleman in at 11 o'clock. 9 to noon continues around the corner at
The Fan.
It's Wild Card Weekend, and 9 to noon on the Friday Football Feast.
Hardcore football.
We have identified 3 of the games we find to be quite compelling. And for yours truly, I'd like to begin with this one.
8 seconds to go. Rudolph throws right side at the 12-yard line to the tight end Gentry. He'll be tackled, and that will be that. This game is over, and the Kansas City Chiefs win their 8th straight victory. On the 30th of October, they were given a 6% chance to win the division. But the 6 gets flipped because now the Kansas City Chiefs have a 100% chance of winning the AFC West. They've done it for a 6th consecutive year. That has never happened in the history of the AFC West, dating back to the American Football League in 1960.
Wow, 106.5, The Wolf, Chiefs Radio Network.
It's the sweet nectar of the end zone. And this game is super compelling to me because the Steelers have become galvanized and are battling for Ben. Juju Smith-Schuster is back.
Yeah.
And I believe will play this weekend. Mm-hmm. It's the same offensive line they've had a majority of the year, and it ain't great.
It ain't. It's not.
Yet here they are. And they got a lot of speed at that wide receiver spot. They got some gamers. Najee Harris hopefully plays in this game. And the Pittsburgh Steelers at Kansas City, it's intriguing to me because of what's happening to these Steelers and how they're winning these tightly contested games, and just so emotional for Ben Roethlisberger because the next game could be the last in the history of a Hall of Fame quarterback. One thing that I really like a lot in this, KC beat Pittsburgh, you heard right there, 36-10, 3 weeks ago. Well, prisoner of the moment's going to look at that and say the same thing's going to happen. I don't think it is. I don't have the guts to tout Pittsburgh on the money line as a 12.5-point dog, but I would give Pittsburgh a chance at 12.5, 12.5 points. Steelers and KC, quite compelling to me. Nordo, you?
I'm going to head out east.
With an eye formation under center is Jones. From his own 36, 3rd down and 5. 2 tight ends, got the snap, pitch out near side, Harris, tight end block, fullback block, breaks tackle, 40, on the numbers, the 50, foot race to the 40, going to the edge, mark the 30, a foot race to the 20, down the middle, 10, 5, touchdown! A burst by Harris, up the middle he goes, and finds a 64-yard gap, and the Patriots on top.
Westwood 1, Kevin Harlan, one of the best to ever do it. This game for me, Patriots at Bills mañana, tomorrow evening.
Mm.
This intrigues me, first of all, because I couldn't pick Chiefs and Steelers. But secondly, the outcomes of this game, guys, I think are limitless. I mean, this is, on the front end, it's just like, okay, Josh Allen and the Bills and Stephon and that defense, just mow down the Pats and move on. But Bill Belichick, if there's one guy in the league that knows how to keep it close to be in the mix in this game, he's the guy to do it. Now, the Bills won four straight, Panthers, Falcons, Jets at home. Those are completely unimpressive victories leading into the playoffs, but they also smashed the Patriots at Foxborough. So again, it's one of the, where everything you say, well, the Bills have the best scoring defense in the NFL. That's a good thing. Oh yeah, the Patriots have the second best scoring defense in the NFL. Bills start slow. Is this a close game for a team like the Bills who have more than a third of their offensive production in the fourth quarter? Are the Bills going to can they wait that long to figure out how to solve Belichick? The one thing the Bills defense does not do well is they do not stop the run, whether it's Ed Oliver, it's Gregory Russo, all these guys they mix in there.
Yep.
They can't stop the run to save their lives.
Remember that Wind game where the Alabama rookie threw three times? Damian Harris got loose up the middle with like some of the worst run defense you will see. And then, like later in the game, the same play was called. It was a trap play. The same thing happened, but he got tripped up it would have been two long ones.
And it's a good example on that. In that respect, I'm glad you bring that up. Remember, Vikings bring Sheldon Richardson in, and it's a preseason game, but they have the Seahawks in town. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks are like, if we just run this trap play, we know that Sheldon Richardson is going to over-pursue and we can get 8 or 9 yards on every single play.
Seven.
That is what a Belichick will do, finding one angle and just push that button all freaking day.
Well, love it.
And he can absolutely find a way to win this game, because the A topic for me with Belichick, I think this defense comes, they show up and they keep it close.
Yeah.
How do you work around Mac Jones? Now, you're not going to have 50-mile-an-hour winds.
Mm-hmm.
I do give potentially single-digit temperatures and any sort of a breeze. I give that a bit more credence than other people do.
Oh, you can drop the ball for sure.
But when the Bills allow 23 points or more, they're 0-4. They don't win shootouts, but they don't have to, because this is going to be a low-scoring game on Saturday night. The line has moved just a hook. It's 4.5. And I like, in a 21-17 or closer game, win or lose, I'm taking those points and Belichick on the road on Saturday evening.
Give me a tout here, Mr. Charchian, and what is compelling to you about one of these games?
I'm going to go Niners-Cowboys.
4:35 to go. Second and 7 for the Cowboys. Hold they lead 27-14. They got a second and 7 at their own 25-yard line. Clement is the back. Two wide receivers to the right. Dak is under center. He's going to do play action, roll to the right. Wise close it on. Picked up by Cole Holcomb at the 30. 25-20. 15-10. 5 on his feet. Pick 6. Touchdown.
Yes.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yes, Cole Holcomb. He was just waiting.
That courtesy of the Team 980, Bram Weinstein, Julie Donaldson, and D'Angelo Hall, making up the three individual broadcast crew there.
I actually know Julie Donaldson and Bram Weinstein, so there's a little history there. I believe there's an upset happening right here. 49ers, I believe, will win over the Cowboys. Cowboys have played, especially offensively, very inconsistently through November and December until 3 weeks ago. Cowboys play a Washington team ravaged by COVID, and they put up a big offensive explosion. Last week, Cowboys come in, play an Eagles team that is sitting all its starters, and Dak throws 5 touchdowns. If you take those games out, this is still a very, very middling offense that has struggled significantly.
Yeah.
Allow me to describe, if you don't mind, a little of the details for you.
Are you trying to keep Kellen Moore from getting a job or what?
Well, I might.
Got 2 minutes.
If we take out the Washington COVID game, the Eagles not playing its starters, Prescott hasn't even reached 283 yards in 6 of the last 8 games, which is his over-under, by the way, in this game.
They were holding back.
Niners have held quarterbacks under 283 yards in 14 of the last 15 games. They've stifled better quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray, Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson twice in this game, in this matchup. I think the Niners are a sneaky good defense. When they get that power running game with Elijah Mitchell going, I think Dallas is going to yield to that. They're going to succumb to that. And all Jimmy Garoppolo has to do, just get the ball in the hands of Deebo Samuel, George Kittle. Let those guys make special plays because they're special athletes.
Brandon Ayuk's on fire right now.
Brandon Ayuk is awfully good. That's all they got to do. I don't trust an inconsistent Cowboys team to put it all together here. Mm-hmm. I'm taking the underdog, 49ers.
What receiver for the Niners? Who did you just
Brandon Ayuk.
Ayuk. Ayuk. Ayuk is on fire. We don't need no Debo. Let the Dallas Cowboys burn. Burn, Dallas Cowboys, burn. Would you go Niners money line plus or both?
Both. Ooh, I'm taking the money line. I'm taking the points. 49ers.
You're getting a plus 140 on it.
Yeah. I don't trust the Cowboys to put it all together in this game.
Understandable. One thing you can trust is that the Faith and Goal episode 13 is available for you right now. KFAN.com, Paul Allen show page. Today is the fourth anniversary of the Minneapolis Miracle. Case Keenum to Stephon Diggs, the rookie safety from Utah, professionally reared by the Anti-Vike, blew the play, and there goes Diggs, stayed in bounds, no flags, and we win. Today's the four-year anniversary of that. So with my Faith and Goal podcast, also available via the free iHeartRadio app, downloaded now, the focus was on the word miracle, specifically the Minneapolis Miracle. Basically, go to the podcast on the show page, KFAN.com, Paul Allen show page, or via Twitter. I tweeted it earlier this morning. Come for the miracle and stay for the wine. Greg Coleman's set to join us shortly. We have some thoughts on the podcast, Faith and Goal, that include then quarterbacks coach Kevin Stefanski, now with the Browns, and also the man who called the play, Pat Shurmur, offensive coordinator. He told Faith and Goal, and he told Faith and Goal what he thought of the play and what led to it. That's all in the podcast, Faith and Goal 13. And 5 minutes into it, you'll hear this part of it with some thoughts from those who were involved in the game. Quote, "It's a miracle. We got this great parking spot, honey." No, it wasn't. "It's a miracle. They didn't fire me for being late to work those 2 days." Actually, that's not a miracle either.
Faith and
Goal. But for the sake of the 13 pod, let's mesh the secular and divine nature of that beautiful word, miracle. The Latin origin of the word miraculum dates back to the 12th century and means object of wonder, or in church Latin, marvelous event caused by God. People who either prepared the Minneapolis miracle, called the play, pointed the receiver in the right direction, went out of body, screaming for thousands to hear, or were left dumbfounded on the field of play shortly after said miracle, they share snippets of what they remember about it 4 years later. Faith and Goal 13, the miracle, starts now.
Faith and Goal.
You could see that week at practice. The Minnesota Vikings, they were going to be a handful. Hooting and hollering, flying around the indoor practice facility at TCO Performance Center like they knew the Minneapolis Miracle was a foregone conclusion. As the Thursday practice concluded, behemoth nose tackle Linval Joseph, Linval Hungry, walked off the field and said to me, "Ain't no way these mother bleepers beating us." Assistant D-line coach Robert Rodriguez followed with, quote, "Amen to that." The whole 2017 season for the Minnesota Vikings was a blessing. Lose your starting quarterback week one and against the Saints and the Anti-Vike on Monday Night Football. Lose your stud rookie running back Dalvin Cook to an ACL the fourth game. Vagabond quarterback Case Keenum never won the heart of Coach Mike Zimmer. Coach always saw Case as lightning in a bottle that eventually he felt would zap us when we least expected it. Even after a 4-touchdown performance in the nation's capital, in a game Case Keenum outdueled Kirk Cousins to win 38-30, into the Rams game, the next game, Coach wouldn't proclaim Keenum the starter against the Rams because Bradford and Teddy were close to playing. Just crazy. Case came to the Vikings from the St. Louis Rams, having spent 2 years there. Yet, old Zim wanted him to squirm his way into the game. Keenum went for an efficient 280-1 versus those Rams and even ran for almost 7 yards a clip. He beat his former team 24-7 thanks to a frenzied 17 unanswered points in the final quarter. The Vikings were 8-2 and clearly on to something good. So good, they finished the season 13-3 and earned a week off in the postseason. New Orleans sneaked by Cam and Carolina in the wild card round and headed to Minneapolis with the great Drew Brees. Coached by the cocksure Andy Vike and a draft class, it was great, starting with corner Marshawn Lattimore up top, running back Alvin Kamara in the middle, and pass-rushing stud Trey Hendrickson near the end. Well done. They were getting dusted. 17-0 at halftime by the Minnesota Vikings in the divisional round, and then came charging like a runaway train. They took the lead with just 25 seconds left. The Purple had no timeouts, and with 10 seconds to go, well, the Minneapolis Miracle. Former Minnesota Vikings linebacker and sideline analyst for the KFAM Minnesota Vikings Radio Network, Ben Lieber, is normally very composed, but even Nacho Lieber couldn't believe what he had just witnessed.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I was riding the emotional wave like everybody else. You know, I heard the disappointment and frustration in your voice, listening to your call as it was happening, watching everybody on the sideline. You know, Everson Griffin is a guy that comes to mind where he was just sitting on the bench and they all the defensive players looked just so sullen. And then the play happens and it's like, you can't believe that Williams makes this diving tackle and misses. And you see the hand on the ground by Diggs. And the next thing you know, everybody, the crescendo just starts within the stadium. And then even when it's happening and the fireworks are going off and people are celebrating, you still couldn't believe that what you just watched and witnessed. And then I look over to the sideline and all the defensive players are all standing up like, you know, we've all seen the video of Everson with his eyes wide open, like, wait, what's going on? And like, that's kind of how everybody felt. And it was just like this slow realization that like, oh my God, this is real.
Amen. It was very real. And thus a Minneapolis miracle is born. Recently retired sideline analyst Greg Coleman went to pointing in the direction of the east end zone while right next to Stephon Diggs and had a smile on his face that went from Minneapolis to Mardi Gras.
To see, number one, everything was in slow motion. Because I have to go back the night before at chapel when we were talking about everybody makes a difference. And Case Keenum said in that huddle, with 10 seconds left, I'm going to give somebody an opportunity to do something great. And he takes the ball, line blocks, everybody runs their route, and right in front of me, Diggsy does a square out. The defender whips. He puts his hand in the ground and spins around. Immediately, my mind flashes back to Jim Marshall when he put his hand on the ground, picking up a fumble, and went the wrong way. Well, sometimes you need a little help and guidance. So I just wanted to point Diggsy in the right direction, and the rest was history. I mean, what an amazing play, something that I will never, ever forget.
A snippet from the Faith and Goal podcast, celebrating the miracle, as in the Minneapolis miracle. You can find it at KFAN.com via the Paul Allen Show page or via the free iHeartRadio app. Go to podcasts and search Faith and Goal. Somebody on the sideline pointing Diggs in the right direction, Greg Coleman, he joins now.